Here we are, Anthony Partridge, award-nominated comedian.
Now, yes. Oh, you've been doing title. Comedy.
Yeah, stand-up comedy is my new bag.
Award nomination, didn't win, but nominated.
I was slightly pleased the fact that he didn't quite get the nomination, weren't we? Deep enough.
It was always nice to see him fall.
It's always nice to see him fall.
It wasn't me. It was our night. It was our event.
Do you feel like you let the whole
I feel like
nomination
I'm the reason
down?
We got nominated, to be fair.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's good. So that's a new job title for you. And then Charlie Borman, Global Adventurer. And I'm just...
No nuts.
Just me. I don't want a pickle. Just want to ride on my motorcycle. We've just been out for a lovely ride around the south of England in fairly wet conditions, but with our guest today, the wonderful James Phelps.
Hello.
Now, James, I've embraced technology.
You're about to have your Wikipedia page read to you.
No. We've moved on.
Ooh.
Wikipedia is dead. Now we have ChatGPT.
Is that the AI thing?
AI learning. I went on to ChatGPT and I put in a question.
Well, you did yourself first, right?
Just to see what came up.
Yeah.
Actually, didn't come up. They're like, they don't have enough information.
It just said, who?
Yeah. I just said, please introduce James Phelps. And this... is what
let's see how much came up.
How
intelligent is it?
James Phelps is an English actor. Yes. Born on February the 25th, 1986.
Yes.
In Birmingham.
Yes.
Ish.
Ish. Well, you get in trouble if you say something. Coalfields in Birmingham sometimes.
Oh dear.
Coalville.
Right. Well,
Coalfield.
We'll write to Microsoft and let them know. He is best known for his role as Fred Weasley in the Harry Potter film series.
Yes.
True. Which he played alongside his identical twin brother, Oliver Phelps.
Yes.
Also true. Who portrayed George Weasley.
How different is this to them reading Wikipedia to you and now you reading this to us?
There's more. James and Oliver were selected from over 10,000 other children to play the roles of the mischievous Weasley twins in the film adventures of J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter book.
Let's make it 20,000.
Yeah, why not? James and Oliver has since gone on to have successful acting careers, suggesting that the Harry Potter wasn't successful.
Yeah, it did flop, didn't it?
With James appearing in a number of films and television shows, including Kingdom, Patchwork and The Turn.
Yes.
You've been in those. Great. Yes, excellent.
It's written quite well so far, hasn't it?
Outside of acting, James is also a keen sports fan and has participated in several charity football matches.
Nothing about paddleboarding. Really.
Are you any good at football? Was there a football career at school?
No, not at all.
I
just ran around like a headless chicken. I still do whenever I play football.
What position?
Anything.
Yeah, do you get put in goal because you're quite tall?
We did something for ice hockey, film a travel series, and we did an ice hockey skit in one location. And I ended up in goal there, just getting slap shots fired at me, which...
Quite dark.
But your brother,
by a pro, yeah.
But your brother must have just.
He was loving it. Yeah, everyone was just standing there going, "Ooh!"
I've never seen that.
When we were kids, one of our teachers, he was a goalie. He came into school with no teeth one day. Obviously, we didn't know this. We were quite young at the time, but obviously, he was a bit of a partier. And him and his hockey mates used to get pissed, and they'd always have bets. And he bet that he could catch a slap shot in the teeth. So he took his mask off and he actually caught the puck in his mouth, but obviously lost like 8 teeth in the front of his face.
Nice.
Broke all his teeth.
But, the level of teaching.
There you go.
Don't do this.
But you briskly say about this travel show, but you were telling us on the motorbike a little bit about your travel show.
Yeah.
So what's that? You do that with your brother, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we've, first season was 6 episodes and second season has been 8 episodes. And basically the premise is, Oliver and I go to a different location. We have a friend join us each episode. Whenever we travel normally, I don't mind where I'm staying as long as there's something fun to do. Oliver's more, he likes to stay in a nicer hotel.
Always meals, like your brother, kind of stuff. Slightly more.
Exactly. Yeah. And then a guest will come and do that. And the idea was basically saying that trying something that you wouldn't necessarily do on a holiday or a vacation, whatever, you'll probably experience things more enjoyable than something that you would always go to, like the default of finding let's find the nicest restaurant. But actually the hole in the wall around the corner will be a more memorable
experience
and probably a nicer, just as nice food kind of thing. And the people you meet. So yeah, we've done all that, done all cool different activities whilst filming and learning to ride bikes as well.
And I was going to say, you've got to some fairly exciting, exotic places.
Yeah, so first season we did Austria for skiing and bobsleigh. I don't know if you've ever done that. And they, first of all, they send you down like basically a bathtub with cushions around it. And then the second one, the German team were practicing and they said, do you want to be my brake guy? So I was like, sure. And actually all you're doing is staring at the floor. Your head's in between your knees and you're just staring at the floor, waiting for him to shout, now. So you pull the brake.
And then you're just being tossed
and
around.
And literally, like it's as if someone's sitting on the back of your head. Like, I don't know why anyone would want to do it. So we did Austria.
How did you get in a bobsleigh?
You like, slide in and there's a lot of fun, but again, you don't really see anything because you're just waiting for him to say, brake.
I've always wanted to have a go at the luge. You know, when it's just you being on that.
I tell you, the one that everyone should do is the Cresta Run in Samaritz. They build the track every year by hand, and then you go down on a tray facing forward on your stomach, and you go down, and they still use all the old stuff from the 40s and 50s, and nothing much has changed. You should do it on your trips because it's one of the iconic things to do, you know. Samaritz is such a kind of glamorous, nice place as well. Yeah. But what a great way to... So did you come up with that idea?
Yeah, my brother came. So when it all came from when we were doing the promos for Potters like 15 years ago, was that we'd go to a city to do the PR. But what we learned is that a lot of people normally just go stay in the hotel, do the junket and leave. Whereas we would be it's a very nice hotel, but we're in Paris, we're in Rome, we're in everywhere. And the local team were very keen to show us the city if we wanted to. And that's what we ended up doing. We'd stay in these really nice hotels, but we'd never be in them because we'd be seeing the towns and cities. And that's kind of where the premise came from, was that we had such a great time exploring and having locals show us where's good to go. And it's one of those, you know someone who knows someone and get the ball rolling. And then we were meant to start shooting in April 2020. And lockdown started in March 2020, so that put the brakes on that one. So then the first season was really what countries opened up first, or at least were willing to have us. So, yeah, first season we did Austria, Poland, Iceland, Ireland, and St. Lucia, as you do. So that went well. They asked for network asked for a second season. And then, yeah, this season we've gone
Are you airing in the UK?
We're going to, yeah, but a lot of what we found is that a lot of the production or channels, whatever, all their bosses keep changing.
Yeah.
And no one wants to give a go on.
Yeah. Well, Discovery and Warner Brothers, that merger has just destroyed all of TV and film.
Yeah,
it's gone.
Yeah, but that happens through just
everywhere.
But it's been the biggest merger in years, though.
I mean, when I did The Emerald Forest, Dad and I made this film together and we had it sewn out a great deal for each other. You know, Dad really sorted me out and, you know, it was looking really good. And then Embassy Pictures collapsed. And so we were left in Brazil with the whole film crew. And so Dad scrabbled together. And so we lost all our shit and just tried to get the money. And anyway, eventually got it made, but lost all the... So it's constantly like that all the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, which people should know as well, is that you're producing it as well, aren't you? So you and your brother own a chunk of it.
Yeah, exactly. So we always kind of joke that at worst we're going to get a holiday. But at best we'll get a TV show made, and that's kind of what's happened. But
it doesn't really turn out to be a holiday, though, does it, really? I mean, you're doing
not
great
really.
adventurous stuff.
Yeah, you're knackered by the end of it.
High pressure, isn't it? Because you've got a film crew, you've got to do it as quickly as possible in as short a time as possible because it costs.
There's only about 11 of us traveling, so it's not a big crew, but there's enough.
11 bedrooms, 11 flights, two or three cars.
This is just Charlie trying to justify his own motorcycle holidays he goes on.
I love them, but they fucking are hard work.
Yeah.
Tell us, let's go back a little bit. So you and your twin brother, were you sort of into acting?
No. A friend of my mum saw they were doing auditions for the first Potter movie. And I think the fourth book had just come out and it was like the first midnight release of a book in a long time. And so...
Were you aware of?
I'd read the books, I wasn't a diehard fan kind of thing. Like, I enjoyed them, but I wasn't going at midnight to to the book launch. Yeah. So yeah, we saw they're doing auditions for the first movie, and we thought it's a day off school. We may get in a movie. Let's see what we've got to lose. And it was that time of year when, just before school finishes, so teachers have kind of not bothered about what's going on anymore, and like you've done all your exams already. And the week before was when you select what GCSEs you want to do. The drama teacher.
So you were 14.
That's right. Yeah. So the drama teacher at my school said, "Don't take drama because you're not going to have any careers in that."
Okay. What was her name?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. She won't be listening to this.
I've actually said that story before. We did a Q&A in front of a couple of thousand people at the opening one of the theme park rides, and someone asked that, and I told that story. Anyway, it went round viral at my old school, and this teacher's ended up, so I'm told, banning anyone from playing because the kid just started playing that on repeat in a lesson. So,
oh my God, kids are so cruel.
Yeah, so anyway, we went to this audition where, and it was an open one where there's people being cast for every role under the sun. And it was the first time we witnessed the pushy parent. All that kind of was...
I can imagine.
My new world, dad, isn't it? My parents were just like, what is this? Is he like,
what have we done to our kids?
Do we want our kids to be a part of this whole thing?
Yeah. So you pull a raffle ticket, and it's basically when your number is called, you go. But we figured out we got hours to wait.
Like the meat section of
pretty much. It was exactly
Tesco's.
Like,
yeah.
I think it was in the same kind of dispenser as well. We realised there are other twins there who were all dressed identical, and all of them and myself weren't. So we literally ran over the street to the department store over there, just grabbed two shirts off the rack.
So you would never, as twins, identical twins, had you always dressed differently?
Pretty much, yeah. My parents were always raised as individual, like, we were never the twins either. It was always
the boys.
And by dressing individually, it probably helped them to realise which one you were.
I think it definitely helped, yeah, exactly.
certainly your friends.
Definitely my mates. So we waited a bit of a while, got into the line to be seen. And it's kind of like a sliding doors moment where the door on the right opened, and another casting director said, "Oh, if anyone wants to come in here, you can." And a load of people went in, but Oliver and I were kind of, "Oh, we're in this line now, let's just wait here." And it just happened the lady that we saw was the head casting director. And so she had obviously a bigger say than the other lady.
Yeah. And had it more in her mind.
Yeah. And so we saw her. She liked what we did, I guess. And then we were called back for another audition to meet Chris Columbus, the director, and David Heyman, the producer, and a few other people. And then that happened four or five times. This all over the summer holidays. And then had a screen test, which is when you're on the set and you have to do it in front of the crew, which is probably the most scared I've ever been in my life.
I bet.
Mm. And then we were given the parts.
Wow.
Yeah, which was pretty...
Which one of you had your ear lopped off?
My brother, Oliver.
Your brother, Oliver.
Yeah. So even doing that, so in the seventh movie, yeah, his character loses an ear. And the original concept that they did for it was like Reservoir Dogs style, like real graphic, but they had to change it because apparently it would have put the rating up to a 15 or 18.
It's amazing. You don't realize the effort that goes into it. People should just sit and just occasionally once in a while look at how many people are involved and just watch the credits. Yeah. And how long
I think
it goes
for
on
about
for
18 minutes or something.
Yeah, and every single one of those people have been paid something. So, and that's why you're when you buy your ticket to go into the cinema, that's who you're paying, all those people.
Yeah. I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but how much of your roles in Harry Potter was acting and how much was you and your brother's personality? Because they're pretty mischievous characters.
To be honest, when it started, a lot of acting. And then over the years, they kind of bled in. And now I'm a lot more like the character than I ever was.
Really?
Because I could get away with it. And I never used to... I was always quite a good
kid. People expect you to be to no good and pulling pranks. And
exactly. And then if we ever did it while we're filming, we could literally just say, "Oh, we're trying this method at the moment." just get away with messing around. But it definitely made me a lot more carefree in my way of doing anything.
Do you think it was easier to... I mean, because you went from nothing into one of the biggest franchises the planet's ever seen. Do you think it was helped you having your brother alongside you and that you had that safety?
I think so, yeah. Because I've always known it as a twin anyway. So he's always been in my... We'll discover things at the same... Like, even at school, you're learning things about something at the exact same time in class and all that kind of thing. And when you go on holidays, you've always got someone to hang out with before you... make friends by the pool or something. So it's kind of just a combination of that, but it definitely made it easier to, like you say, going from, because I'd never been on a film set, so I'd have no idea what a best boy was or what a grip was, and that kind of thing definitely helped.
Do you think if you didn't get that role, would you have pursued acting?
No.
It wasn't like, we'll go try this because I'd really like to get into acting. It was just like, let's go try this, see what happens.
Pretty much, yeah.
And just like, okay, well, now I'm an actor.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I never was going to be an academic, but I wasn't ever destined for university or anything like that, simply because I never had any desire to. But it was, again, something which, for a teacher to say, don't do that, I can never understand any teacher saying for someone like, there's another guy who wanted to be a race car driver or a rallycross or something. And he ended up then, the teacher's like, oh no, you're going to waste too much time doing that.
Yeah.
I can never understand.
Earlier you were talking about when you go on these junkets, you get out of the hotels.
Yeah.
And everyone else probably who's traveling alone probably just sits in the hotels. Is that, again, that relationship that pushes each other and gets you out? Do you think you'd be that minded if there wasn't somebody else?
No, I don't think so. I think that's just who we are anyway. Like my parents were always, if we go on holiday, it would be, we're going out of the hotel to do something, at least half the time we're away would be seeing something. And sometimes when we're away, we even go away, I'll just venture off on our own kind of thing. But it definitely, I think I can't compare it to anything else because I've not known any different.
Sure.
Because I'm a twin as well. I have a twin sister, and people will go, oh, so are you identical? And I'm standing, my sister's standing beside me, and I'm looking at them going, well, do we look identical? I don't know. She's got tits and I have a penis. No, but it's funny.
Harry Potter question. Was there any point when you both went into being in the films that one of you didn't enjoy it? Because it was new for both of you, but it would have got to a point where if one of you's hating it, the other would be like, mate, you can't pull out of this. Like, we come as a pair. Like, it just wouldn't work.
Grin and bear it.
Did you both love it from the get-go?
Yeah, we did. And even if, like any job, there's every so often there's hard times or whatever, but we knew how lucky we were to be doing it. So I knew full well how fortunate we were to be doing it. And even if, like, we're away from our family and friends for quite a while and all this kind of stuff, but equally, not many people get to do what we were doing, and I've never forgotten that in any job I do, really. I know that I've got friends who work silly hours in a factory doing mind-numbing work, as they put it, and I think, how lucky am I to do what I'm doing instead? So that's why I've always had that mentality.
How do you like that bike, James?
That's nice. I think it's just right for my standard.
Yeah, they build a nice bike, Triumph. There.
Yeah, how's everyone else's like?
Yeah, I mean, this is fun.
This thing's like riding a sofa.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
The rear brake is way too far forward. You almost get like.
Yeah. Well, you just got to adjust it for yourself, don't you? And
Does it take some getting used to, that kind of bike?
What, this one?
The Rocket.
I tell you, I've ridden that a little bit, and it rides very well. It's very, you'll be surprised at how nimble it is. And it's got so much fucking grunt, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's reasonably quick.
Oh, it is ridiculously quick. It's fantastic.
Much more importantly than these shitty little Harry Potter franchise motorbikes.
I love talking to people, to new riders, because they kind of remind us of all those amazing first moments, those firsts that you have riding bikes when you're learning. And just, you know, this podcast is called The Nod because it's that acknowledgement that you're in this club, this secret world that if you don't ride, you don't know about, and you've just stepped into it. So tell us about the last 12 months, I guess.
What it came into, yeah. So the only time I've ever actually had to operate a bike before was we were at the opening of the new theme park ride in Orlando, and hundreds of millions of dollars they spent as a big press launch for it. And they had a few of us from the cast there, and when they're planning how everybody will enter this stage. They said, who wants to take the bike in? I was like, sure, I'll do it.
Assuming. And this was the sidecar
It was like a kickstart one with...
And old it was 1970s.
Like a,
yeah.
So I was like, yeah, sure. I just assumed it was on like a rig or something, but it wasn't. So I get there, and then to rehearse a couple of hours before, I got on this bike and they were saying, right, so this is the clutch. I had to put it in first, take off a bit of gas and all this stuff. And I was like, okay. And obviously I just kept stalling it, yanking it to the left, almost sending the thing into the set. So we had to ride out about, I don't know, like 20 yards over where all the cables are. They put like one of those ramp things. You have to get up a little bit of speed to get over that, go round a corner and land on a mark. And they were saying, right, you've got to turn because five of the cast members are going to be standing on your left. You're going to have to stop on that mark because there's a bit of a dip, and then the world's media are in front. So I was like, yeah, okay, I can do that. And it's going to be at night. I was like, okay, fine. So okay, I think I did it once out of the 10 attempts that I did it, because I just kept stalling it.
Oh, so they gave you some dry runs at least.
Attempted, but I just kept stalling it. And it was because it was a kickstart. It as well, I had to wait for the guy to come and kickstart it to go.
Oh yeah, and the hotter they get, the harder it is to start them.
Yeah,
it
was, this like was when 2019.
Okay, yeah.
So you weren't like 14 at the time.
No, I was old enough to know better. And so we get to do this thing. My brother's sitting in this fiberglass sidecar, just thinking, please don't kill me.
He's
in the sidecar.
Oh right. Oh Jesus.
Poor him.
And then just before I go, they say, remember, cast there. Don't go into them. Don't go off there. Don't go into the press, and don't take it left because you'll end up on the hundreds of millions of dollar ride we've just built. Okay, so I hadn't done it at all, but I gave it a throttle, like more than I needed on the throttle, so I really came out on speed. So then I just like jammed the clutch, go over the bump, turn the corner, and they didn't tell me that they put a fog machine there, so there was so I'm just like guessing. I was like, and I'm literally just coasting on the clutch at this point, and then it's like brake. I ended up making it pretty close to where the mark was. And I've got the brake. I was like, how do I turn this off? Without stalling it. So then I kind of casually like choke it at the end and it stalls a little bit and then get away. So that was my only motorbike experience beforehand.
Wow. That's pretty stressful.
Wow. That is stressful. But
when we're doing the second series of the show, the director, Dan, said, how'd you fancy doing a motorbike episode? So I did my theory test, which was, try and do a theory test after driving for 15 years as a... Now,
I always say to people, if you can get through your theory, cram on that, because after that, you'll never have to think about it again.
So did you have the hazard awareness test as well? Did they still do that, where you watch the video and click every time you see a developing hazard? All of a sudden, you're like, Jesus, really dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. So I passed all, did all that, which was fine. And then a lot of people getting their HGV license as well, which was quite... I was the only person to get my bike. Everyone else was getting either their car or their lorry driving. I then had to do my CBT, which I did that in Portsmouth, which was quite a nice place to do it because you ride along the seafront and there was a Spitfire flying around at the time.
Cool.
But the guy just kept saying to me, James, look at the road, because I was there. Oh, is that the Isle of Wight? Oh, is that a Spitfire? So did that, and then did an intensive course, and then, did the Mod 1, Mod 2, Mod 2 was on the Friday. Oh, sorry, on the Monday, and we left on the Friday from London to Lake Como.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you see how much you actually have to do to actually get your test. And one of the big problems of trying to get young people into riding motorcycles is it's actually quite expensive. Because in my day, you'd stop and the guy would say, go around the block for your emergency stop. And then he'd stand there and just tell you to stop. And he said, I'd advise you to do about 20 miles an hour.
Was it quite rough with wooden wheels back then?
I was going to say, they'd only just lifted the speed limit 4 miles an hour when you passed your test, didn't they? Up to 14. Yeah.
But he said what they used to do is they would get you to go around the block for the emergency test and they would hide between the parked cars. Right?
And jump up.
And then they'd jump up and they'd say, stop, and you'd have to stop. Anyway, so this guy, So the guy goes round and he's hiding, the instructor's hiding between the two cars, and he hears the motorbike coming and he jumps out and it's a courier doing about 40 miles an hour. And this guy jumps out to say stop. And this poor courier sees this guy, he slams into him, breaks his leg. And then from that point on, they now have to make them, I don't know if they do it now, I don't know how you do it.
It was in like a car park. Your mod one is just around cones and...
But he doesn't do the emergency stop thing.
No, right? Now there's like a speed trap, and so they register you, so you have to get up to 40 or 50 or something,
and then you have to stop in a certain like painted lines,
stopping distance,
and there's a weave as well, so again you have to go through the speed trap, weave around a set of cones, and end up in another and stop on another set of cones. But you get a couple of, if you don't get up to speed, you can do it again. I think they give you a second chance to do the maneuver again and get up to speed. I think I was more nervous at that than I was for my mod 2. I think I said before, the guy that I had in pools, what he wanted as an examiner, because he was saying, like, you've got through so many things to get to this point. I know you can ride, just pay attention, and I'm not trying to stitch you up. And he was really good at that.
Yeah, and they're just looking, at that stage, they're just looking for confidence.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they don't feel confident on the road, they'll find an excuse to fail you. Did you pass first time, or did you?
No, but that's a different story. both of them.
But I failed my first test as well, so it's easily done.
I didn't pass the first one, but the second one, I went for a couple more lessons with another guy, Steve, in Weymouth, I think he's from. And he was teaching me how to ride, not to pass the test. So I was learning a lot of the, just what to look out for and acknowledgements and things like this. Like I think it's one thing to say, right, do this and you won't, and you'll pass your test. Because one guy that I had for a lesson, when there was a oncoming traffic and there was a parked car traffic coming the other way, he said, I went to go, and he said, well, you should really wait here because an examiner could fail you. And I was like, but I'm on a bike. Like, I'm still on my side of the road. I'm not going to be gunning. Isn't that the point? And he was like, no, I wouldn't do that. Whereas this other guy, Steve, was like, no, you're a bike. That's what, as long as you can see and you're in control, that's fine.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And actually came in my test, and the examiner said, you saw what you can and can't do. Yep, that's what you meant to do on a bike.
I'm so excited for you, because you've got all of this to sort of come where you'll slowly start to make different friends. Well, not different friends, but you'll make friends with people who ride motorbikes, or you have friends who you never knew.
Yeah.
That they rode motorbikes, that you'll then start riding with them. And it's a very nice kind of community that you're entering, really.
Definitely. It's just little things which I enjoyed about how everyone says hello. Like the nod over here.
Oh, the nod, yeah.
In Europe, it seems to be the wave or the foot or something like that, which was...
Well, some people just could go like that, don't they?
Yeah, the very lazy.
It's kind of, how cool can you be, isn't it?
Yeah, like, how nonchalant can the wave be? But Europe,
I try to just ignore it, and I just don't.
Yeah, Charlie doesn't nod at anyone. I'm Charlie Ballman. They're just acknowledging me. That's in his head. That's what's happening. Everyone's like, oh, Charlie.
We're bowing. I thought that's what they were all doing for years. I thought they were just going, oh, God, that's Charlie Ballman.
The Nod is proudly supported by the British Motorcycle Insurance Community, a new digital insurance-led community building platform for the UK's motorcycle brands, communities, associations, and riders. The BMIC connects riders directly with a regulated, established insurer, eliminating intermediaries and pooling spending power to give back to its members in the form of lower premiums, better cover, and rewards. Visit thebmic.co.uk to see how you and your motorcycle community can benefit with the BMIC.
Recording.
Did you come to Australia, do one of my motorcycle tours in Australia? You'd love it, Charlie,
or are we doing a loop round?
No, we're going a loop round. But you would love it, James.
Yeah,
and,
sounds...
10 days of amazing riding.
When I was there, we were pretty much filming for 8 days solid. We did a load of surfing out there, and I was chatting to a load of guys who were, they were going from Adelaide to Sydney.
Sydney.
Lovely.
So it's quite a long ride, but they're saying they're having the time of their life, really.
Yeah, no, it's we're going to go here.
Right turn.
But yes, it is. It's a wonderful part of the world to ride in. And you'd love it, James. You really would. It'd be lovely to have you along.
So actually, you had quite a similar experience to Claudio in the first long way round, that you had a deadline, you had this trip booked, and you had to get your license by that date.
Yeah.
And he failed his test as well, didn't he?
But twice.
So he failed it twice.
Twice. And then we had to send him home when we got to Russia. We had to send him back to then take another test, because otherwise he was fucked, because you couldn't get insurance, you couldn't get film insurance. It was the ripple effect was, yeah. And he lied to us when we said, so you can ride a motorbike. Because yes, I ride motorbikes, yeah.
It's not legal.
Classic art.
Exactly, just saying you can do it.
Yeah. Classic, you can do it. I'm not going to say no to that, you know.
Sounds amazing, yeah.
And then he thought, because he came from, you know, he was a war cameraman in Afghanistan and stuff, and he went up with the Afghans and was filming with the rebels. And I mean, he was hardcore cameraman. He got arrested by the Afghans along with this Russian pilot who got crash landed. And the Russian pilot was saying, we've got to get escape from this prison because they're going to bomb this facility tonight. And they've managed to get away. And as they were going over the hill, you know, these two fighter jets came and blew up the whole compound. And
they're running, yeah, literally.
But anyway, so he comes on up and we're saying to him, yeah, it's going to be really tough. We're going to be riding every day and we're going to be camping and we're going to be filming. He's thinking, yeah, fucking right. A bunch of fucking twats, two actor ponces sort of, you know, going along. But anyway, he luckily he passed his third time, but he said he had terrible pressure. And I'm sure, you know, by the second one came along for you, you must have had terrible pressure because...
I was thinking about it more.
Plus, about your brother had already passed.
Yeah,
he must have been giving you the...
He was, and he liked to explain to everybody how he'd passed first time and I hadn't, but...
Who was with you? Did you do it with somebody?
Yes, we had a guy, Stan, who was Victor Crumb in the fourth movie.
Uh-huh.
Bulgarian guy who... He loves bikes. He's always on them. And so we wanted to do it with somebody that actually rode a motorbike anyway. And he was great as well because, he was teaching us things whilst what to look out for. And he always kept saying his mantra is never outride your guardian angel. So you can stay in contact with where you're going. And it definitely helped, especially when we came to Switzerland and the roads were a bit more windy. Mm-hmm. And we did the Fuka Pass, which was like absolutely epic. And that 2 days to get there, I'd actually gotten enough experience. I was confident enough. And we're on Royal Enfield Himalayan, so that it's not a powerful bike. But
it was a perfect bike, actually, just to start off with.
It was like my first car was a Ford Fiesta, so it was like the bike equivalent of a Ford Fiesta. Like, it will get you where you need it.
I'm not sure if the Ford Fiesta is built better than the Himalayan, thought.
It was good. To be honest, it was one of those bikes where...
Good-looking bike.
I was gutted to give it back by the end of it, because it was a real, like a blue and white paint job, and it just felt really, very comfy. But going around the Fuka Pass, it was perfect just doing the bends, and it wasn't too heavy because I'm not as experienced for the corner. So if it was anything heavier, I probably would have dropped it, and then standing that back uphill or downhill probably wouldn't have been fun.
Yeah. By the end of it, you must have started to feel really
a little bit more confident.
Because I've noticed on the road, you were looking at you in the mirrors, and when you were coming on the way back, you were following me on the way back, and you were, you know, looked really confident on the road and good positioning. So
yeah, it's just getting used to the feelings of everything, and you feel like you're going really far over, and then you watch the film, actually, I'm only turning a tiny bit.
That's the same in anything. You watch yourself on a track, you could do a track day, and you've got a photographer there, and you think your elbows on the ground.
Yeah, I'm Valentino Rossi.
And then you see the photos, and you're like, oh my God.
Barely got my
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're at the position now where you need to get a bike.
Yes.
So we've just been out on you've been riding the Triumph Trident 660. How did you get on with that?
Really enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you, Triumph.
Thank you very much, Triumph. Yeah. I went to the motorbike show at the NEC in February, I think it was, and the Trident really, I just liked the little, it's a good size,
yeah.
Especially for me, because I know I'm not going to be good enough to ride like the Rocket that you guys were on today, or the 1200,
the
Tiger you were on.
It's actually much easier than you think.
Okay.
Actually, you know, the only thing that the Tiger, those bigger bikes have, is that when you're standing still,
yeah,
is that it's just a little bit more awkward. Have you thought about anything? I mean,
I really like the Bovingtons. I think the
T120
such a nice looking bike. If I'm
what kind of riding do you see yourself doing? You want to do more long trips? Do you want to just rip around town? You want to commute on it?
I think just long trips, really.
Yeah,
I did like the new Ducati Scrambler.
I've got an 1100 scrambler. I love it.
I think just that they're the kind of, because I'd rather be upright and a bit more comfy than either hunched over and gunning it, or.
Well, especially for your first bikes, you want to be on a bike where you can get your legs on the ground easily.
But height-wise, the 1200 scrambler Triumph might be a good option because it's a bit taller.
And it's got a bit forks, hasn't it?
A bit more, feel a bit more comfortable on it.
Yeah, because you're tall.
Yeah,
so you can get away with it.
Okay. What that Ducati you've got?
Oh, yeah, the Desert.
The Desert X.
I mean, we all go weak at the meets.
I think I've showed you a photo already.
Are you getting one?
Did I not tell you? Oh, James, have you got 5 minutes?
When you did like the long way up and the long way down and around, did you forget some kind of things you'd planned, and then when you got there it was I remember thinking about this months ago?
Yeah. So, well, I spent most of my time not knowing really what was happening, really. So
spent most of his time in the pub while everybody else did the
work. I did. I remember being in one meeting and after 15 minutes everyone started clapping. And I said, why are you all clapping? They said, well, this is the first time that you've lasted more than 15 minutes in a meeting. Normally, I pretend to take a phone call or I do something to get out of it.
We're actually saying when I did the CVT, I firmly believe that to get your driving license, you should have to do a CBT as well.
I think so.
So then you're aware of what a bike rider is looking for or where they're potentially going to be. Because since doing CBT, I'm a lot more aware of bikes.
Yeah. But I think there's another big mistake it's just something that would be a good idea if you're a car driver to have more training to identify bicycles and motorcycles. My daughter just passed her test recently, a car test, and she said there was very little on bicycles or motorcycles.
James, anyway. I wanted to just change tack slightly. This podcast is about motorcycles, but we also talk about challenges and mental health and those sorts of subjects to normalize those conversations and not be afraid to talk about them. Motorcycles are great tools, that mindfulness of getting out on the road and discovering that. But you're new to biking, so you've got all of this to find out, which is super exciting. But you're not new to mental health. It's something that we all have. So I'm not leading you down a path here, but I guess to put in some context, you've gone from living in Sutton Coalfield, which is probably not the most exciting place in the world to live.
It has
its moments. but then you were thrown into this global phenomenon where you became this international superstar. All of that must have been so vastly different and overwhelming at times. And I'm not putting words in your mouth, but did that have an effect on you? How have you, as you've grown up?
I guess like anything, it's all not trial and error, but you do things even accidentally and you think, actually, I feel better for doing this. So I do a lot of exercise, whether it's, I'm doing the London Marathon in a couple of weeks. Ooh. So I'm actually doing a half marathon tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And then whilst we were filming, I was getting up every morning to do a run while that. But I enjoyed that because it's just anything outdoors, really, I'd say, because it's... And I love being outdoors in nature, whether it's, again, on a bike. Like when we're riding early.
A bike as in a bicycle.
Well, both. I would do road biking as well. Mm. And I'd normally go for a ride then on first thing Sunday morning when there's no one on the roads. And it's literally just... And where I live, I'm very lucky that there's... You know, amazing birds of prey will follow you if you're at the right time in the morning. Like a falcon will be flying right above you and things like that. Like it's pretty epic, and you wouldn't see that. My dog goes paddleboarding with me. He'll sit on the board and just things that anything like that. I really enjoy just being outdoors, and it really just disconnected from my phone and all that kind of thing. Yeah, like I said, I'm doing London Marathon for Endometriosis UK, because that's something which my wife suffered from for quite a while, and it affects 1 in 10 women, but I think 68% of men have no idea what it is. And it's so 1 in 10 women that we know will have have had it or suffers with it. Whatever. So it's basically a lot of sticky blood around the uterus and around that area. And basically it was always put down as it's lady trouble. That's it.
Yeah.
But it's really like heavy periods and it makes them very fatigued and all this kind of stuff.
But the pain is like being hit with a baseball bat in that area. You know what I mean?
It can be deadly in pregnancy, can't it?
It can. Some people can't have children because of it. And there's no way of determining it unless you have surgery to see whether you've got it or not. So there's not even investment has been made worldwide to see if what could relatively be find out what it is. So I put a tweet out that I was, or Instagram, that I was doing that for the London Marathon for it, because also I did a half marathon during lockdown, just a run on my own, and I couldn't walk for a day or two after. And my wife was struggling at the time with her endo that particular time. And she was the exact same position I was in. And I'd had to do a half marathon to feel like she did that. So it was kind of a compromise. But since I announced that, I've had so many messages from people all over the world, either saying, female saying, thank you for, I suffer with it, or even guys saying, oh, it's what my wife had, but I don't really know what it is.
Well, it's always about communication, isn't it? Yeah. It's always about, if you talk about it, the problem becomes less. I mean, I'm sure for your wife, the pain is and everything is still there, but the more that people understand it and know about it, the easier
you can understand
her pain is.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
herself, if you mean, because everybody knows and you can understand. And when you say, I've got this thing, people go, I understand.
Yeah, and I think that
it's that visibility, it's being seen as well. You said earlier that you, growing up, you had no idea that you didn't see actors. You had no idea acting was a career path, that there was a possibility for you. You've now shown other people, you know, by just talking about it. You say, look, it is a possibility. I was just a kid, but you can see me and I'm an actor, right? Yeah. And I had no experience. And then all of a sudden I was on this massive film. So it's the same with this. If you show people it exists and you talk about it, then people can acknowledge, they go, oh, right, that thing that my partner has or that I have is that, and people are talking about it, so it must be okay to acknowledge it and talk about it.
100%. And I mean, with anything, I'm a firm believer on, you can achieve whatever it is that you're after in some way, shape or form if you persist with it. And everything, you're going to get a knockback from everything, but use that as an experience, not a negative, and keep going forward like that. And one thing which I was taught years ago actually was that if you're having a bit of a rough day, one thing I do wherever I'm in the world, I'll go outside and I'll find somewhere to sit down and I'll just close my eyes and listen for 5 minutes to what I can hear. And it's amazing how many things you can hear in that 5 minutes. And then you open your eyes and you can picture things. And it's literally like my batteries are being recharged.
Yeah.
And I actually do that everywhere I go, which has been a very good thing, especially when you're, we didn't get as many shots yesterday as we wanted to get. Does that now put the episode in jeopardy for getting enough stuff like that? So just things like that. I've never been a therapy guy. Like, I've never done therapy,
but you do therapy.
But I do I've never felt like I needed to, because I do that kind of stuff.
Well, what age were you when that started to come into your life, and was there moments that led to that?
I did the Three Peak Challenge about 15 years ago or so, when you climb the three tallest peaks in the UK in 24 hours. And that was the first time I'd been properly mountain, like hiking and things like that. And I realized how much I love outdoors. And just like, this isn't like, if the worst thing in the world right now is me trying to get to the top of this mountain, what an amazing, I'm doing all right today kind of thing. And ever since then, that's always been just outdoors has been my place.
And is that where you escape to, type of thing? So I mean, I'm sure there's been times since you started being an actor that you've had sort of overwhelming moments.
Oh yeah. Well, the audition process isn't fun, is it? So
no.
Like, you can go for so many auditions and don't really hear a peep, and there's so many people that you speak to who just can't deal with it, and because it's pretty much a life of rejection.
Well,
and
that
then
was partly why I stopped acting,
really.
Because I'm so dyslexic that, you know, that you'd have to go and they'd give you lines, you know, 20 minutes before you have to go out. And for me, that just was impossible. And then just terrible anxiety. And I would read the thing and I would interpret it in the wrong way because I wasn't reading it properly. Mm-hmm. And I'd come in and I would start acting and this way, and they'd be looking at you going, what the fuck are you doing? And and so it was, it's you know, you're too tall, you're too small, you're too fat, you're too thin, your eye color's not right. You feel like a piece of meat.
It must have been really hard. Like, so you went from 14 years old, one audition, one job, 100% success rate. How many years were you then employed without having to audition again?
Yeah, 10. I did a couple of jobs where they just want to meet you and you're in.
Because you're one of the biggest faces in film industry. And then all of a sudden that's over. Yep. And you're like, oh, right, what next? I'll go and get a job. And then someone says, no.
Wait, no, they don't say no. You get like the strange smile, really. Which is like, thanks for letting you know.
And you're like, hold on, I'm one of the biggest.
That was great. Thanks for coming in. We'll be in touch.
But I'm one of the biggest names on the planet. I'm sure you're not. You never thought like that. But like, for 10 years, you've been part of everybody going, this is the greatest thing ever. You're one of the greatest actors. Sure. This is amazing. Everyone's, you know, blowing smoke up your ass.
Yeah.
To be that adult for the first time and face rejection, that must have been very difficult.
Yeah, I guess so. But I think it comes to a point where you go from trying to be what they want, what you think they want you to be, to then just going in, this is how I see this character would be, so that's how I'm going to do it. If you like it, you like it. If you don't. And that also went back to, I did like training in acting and all that kind of stuff, which I hadn't done before. So that also helped. And that was, a lot of it was, if you're going to fail, make sure you fail with no regrets of what you're doing. So, and then I've just taken that into everything else I've done. And then I did a show in London, and the director told me one night, everyone watching you in the audience wants you to be good.
Yeah. Because it's all good, isn't it? For everybody, if you're not.
And then I just take that into everything I'm doing now, is that everyone wants you to be good in some way, shape, or form.
And as well as that, if you feel that the performance that night wasn't as good as your other ones, you know, and you feel a bit guilty because you haven't given your all. But really, at the end of the day, that audience, if you've messed up that line or missed out that whatever
nobody
it is,
else knows.
No one knows it's as like, well. And you've got to remember that. And I think it seems, and maybe it's because you've got a twin brother to do it all with.
It's kind of like a asterisk at the end of the CV is also has identical twin brother who acts.
Who does the stunts.
Yeah. But I think, I don't, it's different when I'm working with Oliver. I'm also thinking what he's doing. It's not like if we were acting in a scene, I'd be thinking about me and that's it.
Hmm.
And you know, as in what I'm doing, but I'd be reacting what you're doing. Whereas Oliver, 9 times out of 10, will be cast as my relative in the production. So I'll be looking at making sure that he's doing what he should be doing. He's more of the boss out of the two of us than I am, but I guess it goes down to when we were kids having golf lessons, we would both try and remember what each had been taught so we could tell each other when practicing, kind of thing. So yeah. So I guess it's probably easier not to work with him. Shouldn't say that, should I?
Was that quite weird, quite liberating?
No, when you first started working
on your own, was it?
Yeah, I think so. But I've always been individually mindset in that regard anyway. Like when I was working on the crew, that was the first time I'd lived away from him, so I all of a sudden I had a big group of pals who only knew me and not Oliver, or as in they knew Oliver but from afar, whereas they actually knew me. And that was really the first time that was a thing. So I guess a lot like when twins go to uni for the first time, or they separate, and then you find your own individuality.
Yeah, my sister and I went to different schools and stuff because it was, you know, so that you could do your own thing.
Yeah.
I still have to share my fucking birthday. That's the only thing I begrudge, really.
Imagine being twins born on Christmas Day. What misery that must be.
I've got a pal who's born on Christmas Eve. They're twins. They always get
the two presents.
The two presents in one. Yeah.
My daughter, Dune, is the 21st of December, and she hated as well because, you know, godparents ever would just say, you know, here's Christmas birthday.
How long has my microphone been on the floor for?
Oh, well, it doesn't matter. We can edit you out anyway. Anyway, look, we've talked for ages, and I'm conscious that we've all got places to go, and also that Rick's got to edit this, and he's like, oh, not another mammoth session.
Thank you, Rick.
You agree? Yeah, that's enough. Yeah, as a producer, I'm like, don't go on, just get what you need and move on.
Less is more.
James, thanks for coming on. I'm so glad you got your license, because I know when you came on our silly little paddleboarding thing, we were talking about bikes and you told that story about the Bonneville, and I was like, you've got to get a bike license. You've got to get a bike license. It's the best thing. You're like, yeah, I know. And you have, and that's wicked for you, and it's wicked for us because we could have you on the pod because you passed the entry requirements of having a bike license to come and ride with us. It was really lovely to ride with you today as well. It was nice to get you out.
And, I really enjoyed it. Thank
appreciate
you.
The conditions weren't optimal.
I'd happily ride with you anytime.
Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, it must be intimidating to be riding with global adventurer Charlie Ballman.
Very.
You know, when he's just popping wheelies all over the place.
If he could just
and knowing how many times he's crashed in his life, you know what I mean?
It's, yep.
You
know, but it's the old saying, if you're not crashing, you're not trying.
Well, if you could teach me how to do a wheelie, because I've never been able to do a wheelie.
Starting a bicycle.
Okay.
Much less painful.
James, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks
for
coming
out.
Cheers, guys. Yeah,
thanks for taking your time.
Well, thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Lovely. Thank you for listening to The Nod, a mindful motorcycle podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. Make sure you subscribe to get your alerts and share the show to help us grow. How's that going? Do you like that line? Keep it in? Sure.
Why share not? To help us grow.
Yeah, share the show to help us grow.
And a thing I've learned on Spotify as well, there's a little button to like the
thing. Like, subscribe.
It really helps, is the good thing, yeah.
The like button is now the subscribe button, isn't it? The follow button on Spotify. So do all of that. And follow us on Instagram at The Nod Pod. A big thanks again to our friends and sponsors, the BMIC. Do check them out online and join the community. We will be back next week with another guest who we'll be hitting the road with and having a nice chat. You guys, they just stare at me.
Is that a little laugh?
James is sat in the corner going, can I go now? This is.
No, I just enjoy when you say the nod, you nod as well.
The nod. Do what? Do what?
Oh, cool. I'm going to watch
Oh, I've got a tick. Join us next time. And until then, stay safe, be kind, and check in with a mate.